All right, well, good morning. Well, today is Compassion Sunday, and it's a day to kind of promote the work of Compassion International in alleviating childhood poverty around the world. And so in honor of Compassion Sunday, and kind of as a little object lesson, I've got a little treat for you guys. I'm going to have the ushers come up. They've got some buckets of candy to pass out. So you guys can, I don't think the first service took that much, so you can probably take two or three pieces, whatever you'd like. Like I said, this is kind of an honor of Compassion Sunday, and it's also hopefully just to give you guys a little bit of a sugar rush, and hopefully everybody stays awake then. So take every advantage I can get. All right, just about done. Good. I think got about covered. So I guess we got to talk about something here a second. Guys in the center section didn't get any candy, did you? It's kind of on purpose. Sorry, you guys drew the short straw this morning. You're kind of out of luck. So yeah, unfortunately, the candy's just for the side sections. Sorry. Well, the guys in the side section are enjoying their candy. Let's talk with you in the center here just a second. How y'all feeling? Anybody just a little upset about the no candy thing? Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, you don't usually get candy Sunday mornings. You didn't come expecting it, but, you know, the fact that everybody else is getting candy and you guys didn't probably stinks a little bit, huh? You know, what's the issue? What's the problem? Somebody say it. It doesn't seem
fair.
Fair, yeah. Any of you parents out there, you're probably familiar with that refrain. It's not fair. My kids have said it once or twice in their lives, probably. And as a good father, I will tell you guys what I tell my kids. Life's not fair. Suck it up. Sorry. You know, this whole fairness thing is kind of crazy. As a parent, I realize that it's not something I have to teach my kids about. It's amazing how early in life, like, they developed this concept of fairness, especially if they thought they were the victim of unfairness. This sense of justice is kind of inbred in us. It's kind of innate in us. It doesn't have to really be taught us. We just kind of know it. And we especially know it when it's denied us. So this morning, I want to talk about this idea of justice, not just because it's Compassion Sunday, although that really does tie in, but also because it's something that I think we need to talk about. Now, since we're going to talk about justice and fairness and all that good stuff, and because I don't want to get beat up in the parking lot afterwards, I am going to have the ushers come back, and you guys in the center section, you go ahead and help yourself. And don't want any hard feelings. We want to be fair here this morning. You can thank me later. Or not. Whatever. I've titled my message this morning, Generous Justice, and to be fair, I have to give credit where credit's due. I've borrowed this title, and I've borrowed and adopted some of the material this morning from an excerpt from a book written by Dr. Timothy Keller, who is an author and pastor of Redeemer Presbyterian Church in New York City. This morning, I want to talk about this idea of biblical justice, and to do that, this is one of these times where we do have to go back to the original Hebrew and Greek and look at some of the words that are used and that are translated justice in our Bible, because this is definitely one of those times where we lose some things in translation. There's some things that we miss when we don't understand the Hebrew and Greek that's used in translating this word justice. So I want to start this morning just by kind of introducing the words that are translated justice in the Old Testament, New Testament, and then later in my message, we're going to kind of come back to them and go back in depth a little bit more. In the Hebrew, and I'm not a Hebrew scholar, so I'm probably going to butcher the pronunciation, but in the Hebrew, there's two words that are translated justice. They are mishpat and tzedakah. Now, these two words, which are translated justice, occur in the Old Testament over 600 times. Now, in the New Testament, there's only one word translated justice, and that's dikaios. That word, that Greek word, occurs over 200 times in the New Testament. Now, taken together, that's over 800 times that these words appear in our Bible. Now, that's a lot. I think it's pretty safe to say that justice is a pretty big deal to God. Micah 6:8 is one of my favorite verses in the Bible, a familiar one to many. It says, "He has shown you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? But to do justly, to love mercy, to walk humbly with your God." Isaiah 1:17 says, "Learn to do good, seek justice, rebuke the oppressor, defend the fatherless, plead for the widow." Over and over and over in the Bible, we are told to pursue justice, to seek justice, to perform justice, to desire justice. We're told that God is a God of justice, that he rules in justice, that the foundations of his throne are justice. Justice lies at the center of the heart of God, and as a believer, justice should lie at the center of our heart as well. Unfortunately, at times, I think, for many Christians, justice is seen somewhat as an option or an afterthought. And I think part of the problem, maybe for many of us, is Christians living in white middle America, middle class, we don't particularly or typically face injustice. Not in the sense of a systemic injustice. We don't have to deal with injustice the way many of the people in third world countries do. I'm not discounting that we go through trials and tribulations and we face suffering and you may deal with personal injustice. But the type of systemic widespread injustice that millions and billions around the world deal with is something that's foreign to many of us. And I want to take a second this morning and tell you about the first time I really came face to face with a true injustice. And for me, it happened in 1992, which, as I say that now, seems really, really long ago. It was my very first missions trip. I was a college freshman, and I went with the missions team to Colombia, South America. And these are actually a couple pictures from my trip. Now, it was the first time I had left the country. It was the first time I'd been to a third world country. And this experience changed me in so many different levels. And I could spend an entire sermon just talking about some of the stories and things I experienced there. But from the very first moment of arriving in Colombia, this issue of injustice kind of smacked me in the face. We were working in the northern part of the country, and we flew into the city of Barranquilla. We got off the plane, got into the airport, got our luggage, and went out of the airport to get into our transportation to go 3 hours north of Santa Marta. And the transportation was, I think, every old Chevy and Ford and Dodge in the world all got shipped down to Colombia. So it was all these 57 Chevys and things like that, which would be really cool if they weren't held together with duct tape and baling wire. So most of these, you got in them and you'd saw completely through. You didn't want to drop anything because it would fall right through the floor and you'd lose it. So you're never quite sure if you got in, if you're going to make it back out. But we got into these things, we're loading up our luggage, and as we do, I notice that among all these taxis sitting there, there's also tons and tons of street kids running around. And there's all these little children running around begging. And it didn't take long before a little guy came up to me, couldn't have been more than 10, and he started asking me for money. And we had been told not to give any money to beggars and homeless people, and we hadn't exchanged any dollars to pesos yet, so I couldn't give him anything if I wanted to. But he continued to persist, and I kept having to tell him, no, I'm sorry, I can't help you. And then at one point, he lifted up his shirt. And he lifted up his shirt, and he had what looked like a gigantic hole in his stomach, and his insides were now outside and were taped to his side with a plastic bag. And I remember looking at this, and it's possible it's fake because the street kids were notorious for faking disabilities and injuries to gain sympathy, but it still took me back. And he kept asking, he needs a doctor, he needs an operation, he needed money, and I couldn't do anything. And so we got in the taxi, and this image kind of stuck with me, and we drove for 3 hours, and as we're driving through these different villages and towns, we kept seeing all over the place, and anytime the taxi stopped, you'd be just immediately inundated with street kids out begging. One of the other things we noticed is that all these street kids would be sitting different places, and many of them would have a little jar or a little can or a little paper bag, and they would be sniffing whatever was in that. And I asked the missionary about this, and he said, well, most of the street kids are addicted to sniffing glue or kerosene or paint thinner or whatever they can find to help deal with their hunger pains and the life they're living. So throughout the entire time that we're staying in Colombia, we were constantly seeing these kids and interacting with them. And anytime you go out, where we stayed, we were close to the water, which was like the town dump. And some of these pictures are taken. Not all these kids were street kids. Some of them had families. but you walk down to the town dump and you would see the kids digging through the garbage trying to find something to survive. And so we got in a conversation with a missionary at one point, and we asked him, like, what resources are there for these kids? Isn't anybody doing anything? Where's the government? Where's Children and Family Services? You know, where's, you know, whatever, charities dealing with this? And the missionary told us, he said, you need to understand, here in Colombia, he said, as far as the government's concerned and as far as most of society is concerned, these street kids are nothing more than rats. They are a public health problem, a public nuisance. He said, so much so that shopkeepers and business owners at times will get so fed up with it, they'll band together and they'll hire private vigilante groups to go out and engage in social cleansing and basically round up these kids and execute them. We asked them, of course, immediately, like, well, where are the police? Why aren't they doing something about it? And we were told, well, very often it's the police working on the side, making extra money, that are doing it. This issue, about 2 years after I was there, actually made international headlines, because it kind of came out in the open what was happening, and there was a lot of outcry and a lot of disturbance about it. But that was the first time that I really saw face-to-face injustice on a biblical scale. That kind of thing, unfortunately, happens all over the world, not just in Colombia. And although it's not as blatant and not as visible and not as overt, we still deal with injustice even here in the United States. And as Christians, we're commanded to seek justice and to do justly. But what exactly does that mean, and how do we do it? So this morning, I want to talk about this idea of justice. You see in your notes, there's four key things I want to bring up, want to talk about. The idea of justice, we're going to just kind of be touching the tip of the iceberg here. But the first thing I want to share is that biblical justice is care for the vulnerable. If we're going to fulfill the words of Micah 6:8 and do justly, then we need to understand that justice first starts with concern and care for the vulnerable. The Hebrew word mishpat, translated over 200 times in the Old Testament, at its root means to treat people equitably. It's the idea of the same punishment for the same crime. So under the Old Testament law, under the Mosaic law, if you committed a crime, whether you're a prince, whether you're a pauper, it was the exact same punishment. And this was revolutionary at the time, but it's become a bedrock of our society. So justice means equal punishment for equal crime, but it also means more than that. It means giving people their rights. In Deuteronomy 18, we're told that the priests of the tabernacle were to be supported with a percentage of the people's income. We're also told that this was the priest's right, their mishpat, their justice. Mishpat, then, is giving people what they are due, whether that means punishment or protection or provision. If you dig a little deeper in the Old Testament, you'll see that this idea of justice, particularly mishpat, really gets applied to four specific groups of people time and time and time again. And we're told time and time and time again that God is really concerned that these four groups of people receive justice. And they're called the quartet of the vulnerable. And they are the widows, the orphans, the immigrants, and the poor. These people had no social standing, no resources, no welfare, no food stamps, no social security, no safety net of any kind. They were the most vulnerable. And God makes it abundantly clear that he is especially concerned with them. So much so that as you read the Old Testament, you realize that God judges a society, judges a nation, largely based upon how they treat these, the most vulnerable. And to prove that, I can simply ask a question. We're all familiar with the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, and if I were to ask you, why did God judge Sodom and Gomorrah? Why did he wipe Sodom and Gomorrah off the face of the earth? My guess is that many of us would probably say, well, because of their sexual immorality and their sexual perversion. Fact of the matter is, though, the Bible makes it clear that while that may have been a factor, there is another reason that God judged them. In Ezekiel chapter 16, we're told, as surely as I live, declares the sovereign Lord, your sister Sodom and her daughters never did what you and your daughters have done. Now, this was the sin of your sister Sodom. She and her daughters were arrogant, overfed, and unconcerned. They did not help the poor and needy. They were haughty and did detestable things before me. Therefore, I did away with them, as you have seen. God says that it was their pride, their materialism, and their treatment of the poor that led to their destruction. See, neglecting the poor and needy and ignoring the needs of the most vulnerable members of society isn't just a lack of compassion or mercy. It's at its root a violation of justice, an act of injustice. Moving on, the second thing I want to point out is that biblical justice reflects the character of God. We should be concerned about the most vulnerable among us because justice reflects the very character and nature of who God is. It's striking and worth noting how often justice is used as a description of God's character and his actions. Deuteronomy 32:4 says, "He is the rock, his works are perfect, and all his ways are just. A faithful God who does no wrong, upright and just is he." Isaiah 30, verse 18 says, "Yet the Lord longs to be gracious to you. Therefore he will rise up to show you compassion. For the Lord is a God of justice. Blessed are all who wait for him." And Psalm 68, 5 says, "A father to the fatherless, a defender of widows, is God in his holy dwelling." Throughout the Bible, God identifies with the weak and the poor and the powerless. We see him siding with the outcasts and the misfits. And if we are to do justly, we must be concerned with the most vulnerable in our own society as well. And that includes the poor, the homeless, the widow, and the immigrant. It includes the refugee, the single mother, the kids caught in the foster care system, and from at-risk homes. These are all the most vulnerable in our society. Third point is that biblical justice is righteousness. And I need to explain this a little bit. And this is where we're going to come back to those Hebrew and Greek words. If you remember, there are two Hebrew words translated or justice in the Old Testament, mishpat and, I can never say this right, tzedakah. These two words, what's interesting is not only are they translated justice in the Old Testament, but they're also translated righteousness. In fact, in the Old Testament, these Hebrew words are used somewhat interchangeably, and the idea of justice and righteousness actually is somewhat synonymous in the Old Testament. Now, in the New Testament, the Greek word, I said, was dikaios. What's interesting about this word is that less than 20 times this Greek word is translated justice, but over 50 times it's translated as righteousness. So the same Greek word in our New Testament is translated justice and righteousness. And what's really interesting, if you read through the New Testament, any place you see the word righteousness used, understand that that's also the same word that's translated justice. And so if you read through some of those familiar passages where we're used to seeing the word righteousness and pull out righteousness and put in justice, it gives us a little deeper understanding of what justice really is all about. And so, for instance, the Beatitudes, Matthew chapter 5. "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for justice, for they will be filled." 1 Timothy 6:11. "But you, man of God, flee from all this and pursue justice, godliness, faith, love, endurance, and gentleness." Matthew 6:33. "But seek first his kingdom and his justice, and all these things will be given to you as well." See, it's all the same Greek word. So why did the translators some places use justice and other places use righteousness? Well, at the risk of making a pretty complicated subject overly simple, it really came down to the translator's choice and trying to figure out what word best used context or best translated into context. But the issue is, and we're not going to debate whether they got it right all the time, but what I want to emphasize is the fact of the relationship between justice and righteousness and how closely linked they are. Because unfortunately, what I'm concerned about is that in the decision to translate this Greek word dikaios separately as justice and separately as righteousness some places, what I'm concerned about is that at times it maybe has led us to form an unnatural distinction between justice and righteousness. And that we've come to kind of view them as two separate moral values, moral character traits that we need to pursue. Beyond that, I think maybe even that we have come to emphasize righteousness above justice. Part of that issue, I think, that's involved with this then is that the English word righteous comes from a German root word meaning morally upright. And so we tend to view righteousness as good moral conduct. We tend to see it as focusing on private individual behavior and meaning living a morally pure life before God. And so when we read pursue righteousness, we focus on personal behavior. We believe then that to pursue righteousness means to follow the rules, to do the right things, to not do bad things. It's to be concerned with what you do, what you say, where you go, how you act. All of this has become equated with righteous living. And the problem is that in the midst of this, we run the danger of losing sight of justice. In this sense, then, if we pursue righteousness and see righteousness as upright moral living, and we ignore justice, then we fall into the same trap the Pharisees did. For this is exactly what Jesus accused the Pharisees of doing. In Matthew chapter 23, Jesus reserves some of his strongest language in his condemnation of the Pharisees. He says, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You give a tenth of your spices, mint, dill, and cumin, but you've neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. You blind guides, you strain out a gnat but swallow a camel." Now, this is pretty strong language, but we need to understand that the pursuit of righteousness without an accompanying pursuit of justice is hypocrisy. If we're attempting to live a righteous life before Christ, but we're not concerned about the poor and the needy and the outcast and the downtrodden, the immigrant, the refugee, if we're not concerned about the least of these, then we are unrighteous. You cannot be concerned about righteousness and ignore justice. It's simply not possible. Conversely, if we're pursuing righteousness, if we desire to live in a right relationship with God, we have no choice but to pursue justice for those who most desperately need it. To pursue justice then ultimately means to see relationships restored and to be God's agents in helping to restore a world torn apart by sin. The fourth and final thing I want to point out about justice is that biblical justice demands generosity. And the reference, the Bible references in your notes are not correct there, I'm sorry. We're actually going to look at a passage out of 2 Corinthians. And in 2 Corinthians, Paul is talking to the church in Corinth, and he's trying to convince them to raise an offering and to send money back to the church in Israel that's dealing with persecution and famine and is really suffering. And Corinth is a fairly wealthy metropolitan church, and so Paul's really kind of trying to encourage them to give generously. And he says this, "Remember this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. Whoever sows generously will also reap generously. Each of you should give what you've decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to bless you abundantly, so that in all things at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work, as it is written, 'They have freely scattered their gifts to the poor, their righteousness endures forever.'" Paul says that we need to give cheerfully. God doesn't want our gifts begrudgingly. It's an act of worship to give generously and to partner with God in seeing justice done in the world. And so we are to give willingly and freely. Paul reminds us as well and says, don't be worried, don't be scared. When you give generously, God will bless it and he'll ensure that in spite of your giving, you will have enough. So if we're to pursue righteousness and justice, we absolutely have to be generous. Generous with the material blessings that God has given us and provided for us. I want to end and wrap up this morning just with a brief word of encouragement. And that encouragement is simply to keep up the good work. Give a little personal testimony here. Almost 10 years ago, our family was searching for a new church home. And as we visited a number of different churches in the area, great, wonderful churches, we just never seemed to sense a connection. And we came to Timberline, and we seem to finally connect. And one of the reasons we connected is that we sensed here at Timberline a real concern about pursuing justice. We sensed a church that wanted to make a real and practical difference in people's lives. And we saw it at every level, from the leadership on down. And so I want to say, to recognize just the passion here at Timberline. We've seen that, Jen and I have seen that, in the transitional housing and the support for North Star. We've seen it in individual lives and the concern for working and ministering to the needy. And we see that now with the focus in Guatemala. And so just want to say, good job. Now, the last thing I want to say is that maybe you're sitting here this morning and thinking, well, this is all very educational, but what exactly can I do? Well, the opportunities to pursue justice are literally endless, and we could spend an entire several mornings just talking about practical ways. And unfortunately, I don't have the time to do that. But I do just want to say that honestly, pursuing justice sometimes is just a matter of changing your attitude. Sometimes it's just a matter of being willing to open up your eyes and look around and to look for opportunities instead of excuses. Because there are literally opportunities all around us to pursue justice in your own communities, in your own neighborhoods, your own schools, your own workplaces. Beyond that, there are abundant opportunities here at Timberline to get involved and to do things. Maybe it's going to Guatemala. Maybe it's eating a potato after church and helping support the team going to Guatemala. There are lots of opportunities. Water Street Rescue Mission in our own backyard is a wonderful organization that's engaged every day in pursuing justice for the most vulnerable. You can give of your resources to organizations like International Justice Mission that are doing amazing things all across the world, engaging in fighting against injustice. And finally, this morning, since this is Compassion Sunday, I can say that a very practical and extremely effective way that you can pursue justice is sponsoring a Compassion Child. And I don't know how many of you are Compassion Child sponsors now. My wife and I have sponsored children over the years. But Compassion International is an incredibly effective way of combating childhood poverty around the world. And they are making an incredible difference in the lives of children all over the place. And it's a simple, easy way for you to partner with them simply by sponsoring a child. And we're going to end this morning. We're going to share a video from Compassion International that really puts in perspective what they do and how you can be part of it. And after the service, there's a table in the lobby, and there's some information there. And there are actually sponsorship packets there as well. That if you aren't sponsoring a child, or maybe you want to sponsor an additional child, there are packets there that you can grab. It has the name and a picture of a child and where they live and some information about them. And you can grab one of those packets and you can start sponsoring a child today. And you can make a profound, profound difference in the life of a child living in extreme poverty. So we're going to wrap things up. We're going to go ahead and show that video. And then if you have any questions afterwards, you can feel free to talk to myself or Jen.
Well, I think that challenge is very, very clear, and I think Keith made it very clear. Sometimes we wonder, well, specifically, what can we do? Well, this is one way that we can respond. It's not the only way, but it's one way. I said to you this morning when the service started, you know, listen carefully to what God may be saying to you. So I'm just curious, how many here in this room are sponsoring a Compassion Child, raise your hand, or sponsoring a child somewhere through, okay. So there's a lot of you that are, and there's probably some of you that aren't. I'm not telling you that you have to do that. You need to take that up with God. But I just want to give you that challenge. It's just one great way. What did you say it was? $38 a month. That's a little more than a dollar a day. Nothing compared to what we spend on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. So I challenge you to give that consideration. As Keith said, he or Jen will be out at a little round table out there in the cafe, and there'll be material there. If you've never done it and you'd just like to find out about it, talk to them. It's no obligation. Go up to the table. They're not going to corral you, shake you upside down, make you do it. Well, they might, but probably not. But, you know, check it out, and something for you to give consideration to. When it comes to justice, it's not something we need to consider or pray about. We need to do it. Whether it comes to Compassion Child, well, that's something we need to pray about. But as far as doing justice, as far as living sacrificially, as far as giving generously, we don't have to sit and pray and think and say, Lord, do you want me to? No, it's what we need to do. The Bible's very, very, very clear on that. So I encourage you to talk with them afterwards. So I'd like to invite you just to stand to your feet, if you would. Jim and Lydia are going to be up front here afterwards. They just would love to pray with you. If any of you have something that you would like someone to pray with you about, Jim and Lydia would just be delighted, delighted to do that. And they'll hang around for a bit here afterwards and take time to pray with you. And let's bow our heads for prayer. Father, we want to thank you for this day, this challenge, and the wonderful, wonderful food that we are about to eat. Thank you for the fellowship that we are about to enjoy. And for all of this, we are incredibly grateful. Father, we thank you for children around the world that are being sponsored. And we thank you for that kid today that's probably going to be sponsored. And we're just so delighted. Who can have the eyes of the Lord and ignore the struggling, the helpless, and the weak? Who can gain the heart of God and fail to have compassion for the helpless before them? Who can hear the call of our King and not arise and work in service by his side? To all who have ears that hear, eyes that see, and hearts that bend, go forth into the harvest field of our Lord. Amen. God bless you, and enjoy your eating time together.